ER101. In conjunction with the American College of Emergency Physicians, get the 411 on your 911. Here's your host, Dr. Lee Vinoker.
Hi, and welcome back to ER101. We are talking all about Ebola today with my two guest experts, both emergency physicians, Dr. Roddy Vukmir, adjunct professor of emergency medicine at Temple. He's written extensively about Ebola and infectious diseases, and Dr. David Piggott. He is a professor of emergency medicine, vice chair for academic development at University of Alabama in Birmingham. He's authored multiple articles and book chapters on viral hemorrhagic fevers, including Ebola, and he reviews those for The Lancet. So thank you both again for being on. So, you know, the situation, and I read an interesting article. It was from the New York Times, and it was from makers of a vaccine, a company that was working on a vaccine for Ebola, and it was some time ago. And they were just complaining. I think, when was it? I guess it was back in maybe 2010 or 2011. They could not get anyone to invest because, you know, it was something that was happening in Africa. And unfortunately, sad to say, you know, if it was happening over there, people didn't seem to care about it. And, you know, the movie Contagion, which was very scary, everyone's like, oh, that couldn't happen here. But what do you say about that, Dr. Vukmir, now that we're actually living through it? The key, I think, is we have to treat it at the source.
And again, you're correct. And you know, but before Contagion, there was Outbreak. So I think that was sort of the public's education to a, you know, to a catastrophic hemorrhagic fever. You know, again, I think the issue, the pharmaceutical company question, you know, that is a good one. I don't think it's location as much as just the sure profit and loss associated. I mean, there are pharmaceutical companies that invest $250, $500 million, $750 to get some of these drugs to market. And so the first question is, what is disease prevalent? Up until now, it had just been, sort of a few patients involved. Now the potential is higher. The second piece is, a week after a new drug comes out, there's some ad on a local paper that, you know, that questions whether this was a bad drug and whether litigation was necessary concerning a complication. So I think it's just a pure, you know, patient numbers game. And I think that the more likely this is to be present, I think you'll get more participation. But recognize that, you know, there are a host of companies that are involved right now with many different active and passive immunity type programs. In answer to your question, getting resources to the source and helping is clearly going to be, you know, the most necessary part of this. Right now, it's largely volunteer organizations and groups that do this. Certainly, we will require systematic organizational government support at all levels.
Yeah, and Dr. Piggott, well, it is interesting. I mean, obviously, how many people have died? If you compare that to other diseases, it's still, isn't it close to the orphan drug status, right? Where, you know, you have an orphan drug is something that it's a very rare condition. And so, you know, how do you make it economically feasible for people to develop treatments for it? It's still pretty low, the overall death toll and everything.
It really is. And Tom Geisbert, who's one of the grandfathers of Ebola virus research, he and Peter Jarling together were some of the first people who discovered Ebola in America in that book, The Hot Zone.
Right, Tom, and he actually, they interviewed. Yeah, I'm sorry, they interviewed him for the article in the New York Times that I read, so they did talk to him.
Yeah, he basically said the reason why is there's been no funding, because when people say, well, how come there's no Ebola vaccine yet, it hasn't been that these vaccines haven't been created. They have been. They've been in research form for, you know, 5-10 years, but there's been no push, like you said, to get a commercial backing and to bring them to market.
And what about the medication. So where, Dr. Piggott, so where are they at this point? Obviously, they're fast-tracking it now, right, now that it's coming to the American shores.
So there are NIH dollars flowing to a number of these companies that are both in the process of making antivirals as well as making vaccines. Several of these agents are available for use under an investigational new drug protocol for compassionate use. Mm-hmm. But if you look at ZMapp, the drug that was first used for the folks in Atlanta, the company, MapBioPharmaceuticals in Irvine, California, has basically said, we don't have any. And it may be a while before we can make more. Other agents like TKM Ebola, another antiviral, their CEO has also recently been quoted as saying that their supplies are limited.
Right, because, when you're first doing research on something, you're not going to go gangbusters on producing a lot of drug that eventually have a shelf life and while you're waiting to study it. Another interesting thing is I saw a press release from an Institute of Tropical Medicine, Dr. Vukmar, that was saying something about looking at Ebola survivors, and we know Kent Brantley has been kind of donating blood everywhere because of the antibodies. Is that one of the new ways they're going to try and stem the outbreaks?
No, absolutely true. You know, this is an exciting time as well. You know, when you went to medical school and you took your microbiology course, you know, you learned about Edward Jenner and sort of how they made decisions and noticed that some part of the population didn't really get smallpox, and then they connected that back to a cowpox similar vaccine, and then they inoculated people with with skin lesions. So, you know, medicine develops as it needs to develop, and this is a time where, you know, exciting innovation is on the table. You've got an active immunity process where, again, you develop a vaccine, you inject that vaccine, and, you know, people get a developed immunity, much like you would get a flu shot. You have passive immunity where if a patient is exposed to tetanus or exposed to rabies, you can actually provide essentially a serum product like you just described, where those circulating antibodies and immunoglobulins are already there. And then lastly, there are chemical manipulations directed at the virus itself and its protein base. Remember, this is a very primitive virus. It has been around for 200 million years, and I am certain it will outlast us. But it's a single-stranded RNA, you know, envelope virus, and again, it's a situation where it is difficult to sort of have an antiviral medicine that works. So there's no Tamiflu on the environment, you know, in the environment for this one, at least at this point.
Okay. And Dr. Piggott, we have a minute left. Any other suggestions you have for everyone, you know, to try and calm fears?
Again, I would say, you know, turn off your TV. That might be that'd be one thing.
Don't pick up a paper either.
But again, the risk to the general public is, I think, been significantly exaggerated, and I think a realistic look at what the real risks are would make people feel a lot better. And hopefully that's something we are able to do today.
Yeah, no, actually, both of you, thank you so much. Both are going to be participating in a panel at the Scientific Assembly of the American College of Emergency Physicians all about Ebola to further educate our other emergency medicine colleagues. I want to thank both of them. They've done a great job, and it's important to stay well and tune into your health. I'm Dr. Lee Vanocur on Radio MD.